When they do hear it, they get it because they listen carefully. And if I had to bet my last dollar, I would bet it on this generation of young people because they're not carrying the same baggage we're carrying. And if they ever stand up, they will change America and change the world for their children and their children's children.
Former California Congress member, chair of the House Armed Services Committee, former Oakland mayor Ron Dellum, speaking in 2015. He died on Monday of cancer at the age of 82. And that does it for our show. Happy birthday, Jemiah Lewis, and happy graduation to our news fellow, Libby Rainey. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
This is KBOO Portland.
Hi, I'm Rick Mitchell, and I would like to invite you to check out my program, Jazz in the New Millennium, at KBOO.fm. Each one-hour program focuses on a living jazz artist, putting their work in historical perspective, from their earliest recordings to their most recent. The current season features such legends as McCoy Tyner, Wynton Marsalis, and Dee Dee Bridgewater, as well as rising stars Julian Lage, Joy Alexander, and Tia Fuller. New shows are posted weekly, and you can also find the complete first season. The program is syndicated nationally by the African American Public Radio Consortium, but it can be heard anytime on KBOO's website by going to the drop-down menu on the homepage, clicking on Audio, then Podcasts, and scrolling down to the Jazz in the New Millennium page. That's Jazz in the New Millennium with Rick Mitchell at KBOO.fm.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm. Coming up this morning, next at 8, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show asks, what does it mean that the census form has added a citizenship question? And they take your calls. At 9, an alternative radio political analyst, Michael Parenti, discusses democracy and inequality. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. And at 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, on stage and studio, DMA talks to three artistic directors who are working to change the face of Shakespeare. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, they talk to artists, curators, and critics. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by your support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
Don't let Rupert Murdoch control your newscast. The KBOO Evening News provides breaking news about local issues, from water fluoridation to immigration raids. We bring you daily coverage of what's going on in Portland, Cascadia, and around the world. Tune in every weekday at 5 for the KBOO Evening News on KBOO, your community radio station.
KBOO Community Radio is 50. We are celebrating our birthday with a big street fair and party on August 11th from noon to 10 p.m. here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland. We'll be broadcasting live bands all day and an open house celebrating 50 years of KBOO. There will be a reunion from 2 to 5 during the street party for folks looking to see KBOO volunteers from other eras. So save the date, Saturday, August 11th, to celebrate 50 years of KBOO with your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Morning.
Morning.
Yeah.
I don't know about that.
This morning?
No, about that.
I can state affirmatively.
It's morning.
It's in fact morning.
It's smoky.
Yeah.
Smoky the bear. Smoky bear. It's not the bear.
Well, I'm glad you resolved that.
No, they resolved that.
Okay.
I don't.
I'm glad you're taking up part of our show, making that clear.
Yes.
This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. This is also KBOO 90.7 FM on your radio dial. If you're on one of the internet tubes, it's KBOO.FM. And we're going to be here with you for the next hour.
Yeah, and you can call us on a regular landline or a similar device, 231-8187.
Got a question for you.
Okay.
How do we know how many people are in the United States?
We have a census, which is required by the Constitution.
That's true. How does that work?
Well, every 10 years, people are essentially asked how many are in the household, and traditionally, do you have outside toilets, and a whole bunch of questions like that.
Yeah. Not only does it survey the number of people here, but
situation.
Yeah, yes, all sorts of data regarding how people live and where and that sort. One thing it has not asked the census for a long time, since 1950, as a matter of fact. A question that's not been on the census is, are you a U.S. citizen?
Right.
But this next census in 2020 is going to ask that question.
Well, yes, they are going to ask that question.
Well, they want to ask that question.
Well, they plan to.
There's a legal challenge to
that. Yes, there's always a legal challenge. But, you know, we have a Supreme Court that's not so good.
Uh-huh.
And already there's a survey within the census called the American Community Survey. You know about this?
Yeah, that happens every year.
Right.
Yeah.
And already in it, they're asking questions about citizenship.
Yeah. Well, that's been happening for a long time.
Yeah.
The American Community Survey is a much smaller endeavor than the full census. I think it's something under 3% of households fill it out, I guess. I'm not sure if it's at random or if it's by design.
I made paper airplanes out of it.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, you didn't fill it out and send it back?
No.
Why not?
I don't like them.
Why?
Because they're intruding my life.
They're just asking you stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, okay. So you don't respond to that.
I don't trust the government.
You don't trust the government.
Okay. Not at all.
All right. Not fair. Okay, sure. That's fine. Yeah. Whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is your choice to not fill out the community survey.
Right.
But
I'm not sure it's your choice. I'm not sure that they don't have the ways to. They have their ways, you know.
I don't think the feds are going to come after you if you don't fill out the American Community Survey.
Well, not now.
My whole point,
next
before
week,
we got lost in the weeds,
okay,
was to say that the American Community Survey has a sample size of somewhere under 3%, close to 3% of the
right.
population.
Right, and it asks more many more intimate questions.
Yeah, by intimate, you mean about living arrangements and so on.
Yeah, and are you a citizen, and what is your ethnicity? A lot of questions that really... edge the privacy barrier.
Yeah,
so perhaps cross it
with a 2.whatever% sample size.
Yeah.
It's not as accurate.
No.
As the full census, but it helps us get an idea of what constitutes the population during those intervening 10 years between census.
Right.
Yeah. So this year census is going to ask why
the big census.
The big census is going to ask, are you a U.S. citizen?
First time since 1950.
So tell us, Joe, why is that controversial?
Well, what it's in and of itself as an abstract concept, people would say, oh, well, so what? But what it is it's part of the same program of disenfranchisement and dismissal of persons who are recently in the United States. It is the Trump device.
So you're saying this is of a piece with the organized and long-standing campaign to ensure that only the right sorts of people show up at the polls.
Right. We don't want no Latinos here.
We don't want no Latinos.
And we want to build a wall. Trump now is going to stop Congress, stop all legislation, I think, maybe, who knows with him, to force the wall since the Mexicans won't build it.
Uh-huh. So is this, people have been saying, and we even promoted this show on the basis that the citizenship question in the census is about voter disenfranchisement. But are those things actually connected?
Well, look, what is attempted here is to create a situation where it's very unclear, and the ambiguities created therein are very useful to managing or manipulating the process of voting.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's going on. Remember that the Republican Party seems committed to keeping the voting lists as small as possible.
Yes, but this is the census. This is not about going to the polls. We already, non-citizens cannot vote in the United States, correct?
Correct.
And despite allegations of massive voter fraud from conservative political circles, we know that this kind of voter fraud is not actually happening.
No, but
so the problem of non-citizens voting is not actually a problem.
Not really.
It's a minuscule, vanishingly small problem.
Yes, that's correct. But the idea of disenfranchisement, of establishing doubt about people who are part of America, is very important to the overall paranoid vision that foreigners, particularly people of color, are influencing unduly our politics.
I see. So this is less about voter fraud than it is about, ultimately, political power and where it's consolidated.
Well, duh.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's a fine point, but I wanted to make sure.
No, I think it's important, and I think you're right to make sure that I'm making sure that everybody understands what's going on here.
All right, here's what the Constitution says. This is Article 1, Section 2.
Right.
Representatives and direct taxes shall be apportioned among the several states, which may be included within this union, according to their respective numbers, which shall be determined by adding to the whole number of free persons, including those bound to service for a term of years, and excluding Indians not taxed, 3/5 of all other persons. So
3/5 of all other persons was a compromise to allow slaves to be counted, but of course not to participate.
Right, so that the southern states could have more representation in Congress.
Right.
Based upon this large number of people who were not in fact people by legal definition, but property.
Right.
Right. Not the proudest moment in the history of our
Well, there's a lot of stuff that's not such proud moments when you really look at the Constitution or early founding fathers.
Yeah, but I'm merely trying to acknowledge what is, in fact, our nation's original sin.
Right.
Slavery.
Yes.
And how it is even enshrined within
the Constitution. Well, and also the slaughter of Native Americans. I have two original sins.
Two original sins, indeed. So the point I'm trying to make here is that the census was never about determining the number of citizens, but rather determining the number of people, citizen or not, who live in each state.
Is that a difference without a distinction, or what are we talking here?
Well, no, it's not. Here's why. So regardless of how many citizens you have in Oregon, say, right?
Yeah.
Regardless of how many the residents of Oregon are actually citizens.
I think 13.
Our representation in Congress is determined not by that number, but by the total number of people who live here, citizen
right.
or not.
Right.
So the result of adding this question to the census is in two parts. First, this is going to cause a lot of people to not respond to the census because they're afraid of the consequences of revealing that they might not be a citizen.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And by extension, states with a large population of non-citizens, California, New York, Texas, are going to lose representation in Congress.
Right.
Those states, with the exception of Texas, are almost overwhelmingly blue in the blue-red scheme of things. So the end result of adding this question to the census means a watering down of the influence of, I'm speaking very broadly here, progressives in the United States government.
The possibility of progressives.
The possibility of progressives.
Yeah.
But the flip side of that coin means a concentration of power for conservatives.
Right.
Right.
Well, and we have to look at this in the larger context. Today's lead story in the New York Times is a plan by Mnuchin. You remember him?
Uh-huh.
He has a pretty wife, and he holds sheets of money.
Yeah.
And he flies around on our dollar. Anyway, he and others plan to use their regulatory power to change the tax structure so that there will be $100 billion more dollars given back to the wealthy and taken away from the general fund.
So your contention is that the citizenship question is going to make more stuff like this possible.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No. There's a larger thing going on here, and the larger thing that's going on is a disenfranchisement thing. When finally there was a breakthrough and people of color were in some places, not everywhere, allowed to vote, encouraged even to vote, already there was a great deal of fear. There are two things going on. There is a fear of ordinary people that you see among the ruling classes. And the other fear is the fear of the other. And the other in our culture is generally defined as either women and or persons of color. Mm-hmm. So silencing those groups, knocking them out of the game, is very desirable for people who are racists or sexist or just generally paranoid.
Or diluting their power in some way.
Yeah.
It's interesting because I was doing a little research on the history of voter suppression in the United States. And as we studied at the outset, this question in the census is not technically about voter suppression, but the aim is the same.
Yeah.
And this part, as you said, part of this whole toolkit of tactics that conservatives have used forever to try to keep the wrong people from exercising political power in the United
right.
States. The tactics that were used, and we most commonly think of voter suppression as taking place in the Old South. And that's not a mistake because that's where it most commonly takes place. But at the time when these measures were put into effect, I'm talking mostly about the post-war years, post-Reconstruction years, post-Civil War years
right.
in the South, the tactics that were adopted by people in the South were explicitly adopted from the anti-immigrant voting tactics that were already in place throughout the Northern states.
Yeah, except that in the South, a lot of terror tactics were added to that.
Oh, yes. There was never an anti-democratic notion that the South couldn't make even worse. Let's put that right out on the table. Yeah, but things like poll taxes, grandfather clauses,
literacy tests, right.
and so on and so forth, those were all invented in the North to keep immigrants from voting, mostly Catholic, Irish, and Germans early on.
Yeah.
So interesting. Interesting that voter suppression, something we can usually associate with the old conservative South, really came out of the industrial Northeast.
Well, if you look at the Nash cartoons or other popular political cartoons mm-hmm. of the late 1800s, you quickly see an anti-Catholic bias in very intensely. The suggestion is that the Pope sends they turn into crocodiles in the water. Pope is sending mm-hmm. their emissaries to destroy American democracy, which is equivalent to, or assumed to be equivalent to, the Protestant people.
I don't remember because I wasn't alive, but it is a fact.
I was going to say, that's quite a memory. Yeah.
it was a fact that when John Kennedy was running for president, he was asked in public if he owed his allegiance to the Pope or to the Constitution.
Well, it was a planned event.
It
was in Texas, in fact.
Yeah.
And it was a clever move because it mm-hmm. cut the anti-Catholic crowd off at the knees. And particularly when in the South at that time, the Democratic Party ruled.
Yeah. It's ironic, though, on many levels, right? That the fact that JFK was a Catholic was a deal breaker for a great many people, most of them white and conservative.
Right.
But at the same time today, do you think an avowed atheist would have any chance of being elected president?
As being an avowed atheist?
Being a public atheist.
A public
when asked
atheist.
About their faith, answering, I don't believe in God. Would that person have a chance?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
I don't think we'll ever know.
I don't. But that's not...
They all pretend.
That's true. They do all pretend. But let me ask you this. Okay, I was thinking about this, and we're talking about what the ripple effect from including this question in the census would mean in terms of the potency of political power on both sides of the spectrum down the road, right? But in a vacuum, is there anything wrong with including that question in the census? Are you a U.S. citizen? Is that an illegitimate question?
Is it inherently a legitimate question?
Yeah, that's my question.
It could be if you separate. Now, this is a fallacious idea because it isn't how it works. But if you separate any one of the questions that are being asked, for example, do you have indoor toilets? I mean, whatever. Mm-hmm. In itself, as an abstraction, it seems legitimate. But when you put it in the context of what's really going on, look at Citizens United, mm-hmm. for example. When you look at this, you realize that there's a process going on which is attempting to isolate and bring forward the most likely right-wing voting population and to suppress the behaviors of those who are perceived as most likely to be either liberal or leftist in their politics.
Yeah, I think that's spot on. But here's what really frightens me about this, and it's of a piece with this trend we're talking about, that under this president, given the tactics that he has already employed, the rounding up of undocumented persons, the separation of children from their families at the border, who's to say whether answering no to that question, I am not a U.S. citizen on the census, who's to say that that's not going to result in a knock on the door in the middle of the night by some federal employees wanting to have a little conversation with whoever it is claims
well,
to be
I think that's
not
the,
a citizen of the
that's
United States.
That's the deliberately created fear of that question.
That's exactly right.
And then if people don't participate, or if they're afraid to be public citizens for whatever reason, and I'm not talking about people who are not qualified to vote, but people who are marginally challengeable in the voting process, if that's suppressed, then you have a situation where fewer people are given the opportunity to speak their mind politically.
Yeah.
It's a very serious, serious trend.
Yeah, I agree.
It's all of a piece with Citizens United, which essentially said, hey, money is free speech.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, you know, if you happen to have more money, it means you can speak a little louder.
Oh, yeah.
And that's totally fair.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Let's go to the phones. Sheila, good morning.
Good morning. Well, you know, you touched on something that's been bothering me for 18 years. We're still on computer voting. Why haven't we not done anything about going back to paper ballots? And this ties in with your thing about voter suppression.
Well, you know, Sheila, I'm glad you raised that. It seems to me that the obvious and simple solution is simply paper ballots.
Well, they don't want them.
No, they don't. They want machines that can be manipulated.
That's right. So when the hell are we going to do something about paper ballots? Why aren't people saying something, doing something about fighting for paper ballots?
Well, it's not an issue in Oregon, remember. I mean,
well, it's not an issue in Oregon, but it certainly is an issue around the rest of the country. And, you know, the other thing is, yeah, we say it's not an issue for Oregon, but our paper ballots, the things we mail in, are read by computers.
That may be true.
Yeah, that's true. They're scanned by optical scanning machines. Yeah.
So it's no better.
Well, I think it is
better.
I think it's marginally better. I think it's important.
But what's
really happening, and we know that this is going on, is that there's a massive effort to manipulate the calculation of votes throughout the United States. And we're also becoming more and more clear that there are enemies who are at war with us. I mean, at war to distort and destroy the United States. And among those enemies, clearly, is Putin's government in Russia.
Well, I think they've got it set up so that they're going to split the world when they both take control of the whole thing.
Who are they?
Say Putin and Trump.
Oh, yeah.
I think their fantasy is let's split it up when we get control of everything. But I'm just being a little silly, you know. But
it's a silly season.
It's a silly season. It's a scary season.
Yes.
So anyway, I had to bring that up. I wish people would get more involved in that issue because it's 18 years.
No, I think you're right. I also think, since you brought up getting involved, if we all focus too much on the ugliness and the stupidity and the fascism of Trump and not enough on the organizing and the struggle to create a more liberal democracy, we're going to all miss out because this guy's bad, but it's not the only thing.
That's our representatives that are doing this, too.
Well,
it's not just Trump. It's our whole government is corrupt. Well, not the whole government.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait.
I think you have a point, Sheila, in that the corrosive influence of money on the machinery of our electoral politics has resulted in an inherently corrupt system.
Well, and in fact, we have a weird government at this time that's denying climate change, even as California is burning and all over the European continent there's fires and the weather is much hotter and people are looking to migrate to the north as they deal with this incredible bad weather situation. And that's all climate change.
Maybe we ought to go far south.
Far south? You mean like Antarctica?
As far south and as far north.
Well, you go to Antarctica and it's breaking up. And breaking up is hard to do. All right, sorry.
We're going to drown there also.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, thank you for the call, Sheila. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye. Okay.
I got to set you straight, Joe. Antarctica is a continent. It is not breaking up. However, the Arctic ice sheet is breaking up.
No, actually, both have ice sheets.
Indeed.
And the Antarctic ice sheet,
you said,
Ross ice sheet, for example, is breaking up. Yeah,
Antarctica is breaking up. Okay, it's not.
Yeah.
All right. Sheila asked a very good question. How did our electoral system become so convoluted? That is a really interesting question with a really long answer. And to that, I want to refer our listeners to a series that's being run right now in the lead up to this year's election at talkingpointsmemo.com called Retreat from Democracy. It's a series of guest essays all about this question, the suppression of votes through U.S. history. Fascinating, very well researched, very well annotated, and really worth your time.
What is the source?
TalkingPointsMemo.com.
Okay.
And while we're on it, it's a great independent online news source, and I encourage people to read it on a regular basis. And that's not just me who says so. Bill Moyers says so as well.
Bill Moyers. Oh, sacred Bill. So, cross your heart and hope to die.
Right. So the article from this series that I read in preparation for today's show is called Today's Voter Suppression Tactics Have a 150-Year History. It's by Gregory Downs, a professor of history at UC Davis. Mm. Really good stuff, and goes into some detail about how this all happened. One of the reasons that we don't have a nationwide voting standard, which really seems like a no-brainer to me, is because various regions of the country, for various reasons, have at one time or another tried to restrict the franchise from certain groups of people.
Yeah.
And it's for that very reason that they still want to do it today. And it's for that very reason that they continue to invoke that old specter of states' rights when they try to do it. Why don't we have a national voting standard? Well, because people in Alabama, we've always done it this way, and we know what's best for Alabamans. We're going to keep doing it this way.
Why pick on Alabama?
Well, I picked on Alabama because Alabama is one of the primary subjects of this particular essay.
I see.
Because the voter suppression tactics there are particularly brutal, particularly nefarious, and particularly systematic.
And particularly arcane.
And modeled directly from those anti-immigrant policies I talked about from the Northeast.
Right.
So, yeah, fascinating series of articles, and I encourage people to use it. The result, the fallout from this disjointed regional state-by-state system of voting that we have, is that the United States ranks 26th out of 32 developed democracies in voter participation.
No.
Yeah.
Gee.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's not good.
No, it's not good.
No. 503-231-8187 is a call. Who's next? Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Joe, Abe. I had two quick points. Yes, paper ballots. For gosh sakes, paper ballots. Okay, they get scanned by the electronic voting machines, right? Do they keep the ballots? Do they save those paper ballots?
Yes, it's my understanding that they do.
Okay.
Yeah, but in case of recounts, they keep them. I don't know how long, and I'm not sure how well, but they do keep them.
Well, that's part of the necessity. Okay, the other point, and I'll take it off the air, can this, what we're going through now, be compared to McCarthyism?
In what sense? I'm not following quite.
The fear.
Oh,
the
fear.
Yeah, the fear. The fear on the census level, is it a McCarthy-type attack? Do you remember people's careers were ruined back then because they said and did the wrong things?
Yeah.
Okay, I was wondering if you can... Is there any correlation?
Well, I don't know about a correlation. It has certain similarities, and certainly it is a form of oppression. So in that sense, it's correlated, but it's not real correlation in a mathematical sense.
Right.
Anyway.
But you're right. They're tactically and strategically similar.
Yeah.
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 Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Hey, thanks very much for the call.
Sure.
this is all fascinating for the policy nerd inside me.
I am so glad you're a nerd.
Yeah, it's true.
You're a bearded nerd.
I am a bearded nerd.
There's nothing worse, by the way.
No, there's worse.
Okay.
Trump doesn't have a beard, and he's not a nerd. So, and he's worse than I am.
Well, he's not a nerd. He's not a nothing. He's a nothing. He's a.
Right.
I don't want to start on him. But that, unfortunately, because he's such a bizarre character and a clown and so on and so on, he gets all the attention. We all need to understand that he is simply the spearhead of structural threats to American democracy.
Yeah. And also, a racist narcissist who's not very smart, who has seemingly has his own set of grudges in play.
Well, he's not very smart, but he is, how do you want to call it, cagey?
Cunning.
Cunning.
Okay.
Something like that.
Something like that. Here's my take on this whole census question thing. I don't think it's fundamentally illegitimate to ask the question, are you a U.S. citizen? But I also think that question is answered in other places thoroughly. We already have a running count of who is a U.S. citizen. It's kept by agencies like the Social Security Administration, for example. So I think it's correct to presume that the fallout from adding this question to the census will be that a great number of people residing in the United States will opt not to respond to the census.
Well, there's already a significant number, actually.
Yeah, there's already a significant number that who do not respond to the census.
Yeah.
But the census remains the best way we have to ascertain what American society actually looks like.
Yes, that's true.
And so we need to do whatever we can to make sure that we get as accurate a picture from it as possible.
Right.
And including the citizenship question is going to make the census less accurate and give us a less complete picture of what American society actually looks like.
Right. And if this were occurring in a vacuum, I'd say it's simply a mistake.
Yeah.
But it's not occurring in a vacuum.
No, it's not.
This is part of a long-term, I think long-term, and I don't want to sound paranoid here, but I think I'm right, long-term plan to essentially suppress as much of the vote, particularly of persons of color, as is possible.
Oh, it's absolutely right. And there seems to almost be a willful ignorance about this question amongst large segments of the electorate. We seem to think that this doesn't happen anymore, or it can't happen around here. But voter suppression is alive and well, and we see it election after election after election.
Yeah.
Along with the same set of spurious accusations that voter fraud is a widespread phenomenon, when it simply is not. So all of these measures that are undertaken by conservatives in the name of maintaining the integrity of our electoral system, it's hogwash. It's all designed to keep the wrong people from voting.
I want to say one thing. What the people who call themselves or whom we label conservatives are not conservatives. At all.
No?
No, they're fascists. We need to make a distinction between those who would do away with American democracy and those people who believe that that government is best that governs least.
Yes, certainly, but we also need to make a distinction amongst people of a conservative bent between those who do endorse these sorts of measures and those who don't.
Okay.
Okay.
I'll be nice about that.
All right, thank you.
Yeah.
All right, this is KBOO 90.7 FM. You're listening to the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. That's Joe over there. I'm Abe sitting right here.
Over there?
Over there.
And over here.
Over here.
But he's over there.
Yeah. At 9, it's all about where you're sitting. At 9 on Alternative Radio, political analyst Michael Parenti discusses democracy and inequality. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. At 11, stage and studio, D-May talks to three artistic directors who are working to change the face of Shakespeare. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, the talk is with
can't change
artists,
the face
curators,
of Shakespeare.
And critics.
There's a print of him that is everywhere.
I think they're talking about a metaphorical change. You'll just have to tune in.
Okay.
All this and more coming up today on KBOO. If you want to give us a call, I encourage you to do so, 503-231-8187. You can also write to us at the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Mark writes in to say, I think he's talking about the regulatory money grab that you mentioned at the outset of the show.
Yeah.
Mark writes, the GOP tax heist gave $5 trillion to households with over $1 million income. Are owners of capital the only ones with enforceable rights? The tax bill, without hearings, compromises, concessions, countermeasures, and negotiations, reflected plutocracy or oligarchy, misanthropy, and contempt for the lower 90%. After the Soviet Union imploded, we entered an anything goes or the running amok phase of late-stage capitalism. The financial markets uncoupled from the real economy, $18 trillion of taxpayer money was infused in too big to fail banks. Private risks became public risks.
And they're going to put the money back in the banks without any process. They're going to allow the banks to invest in all kinds of weird stuff.
Right.
Flying saucers.
One might argue the system is running exactly as designed.
By bad men.
By bad men.
Not many women.
Robert writes in also to say, Oregon, as far as I know, Oregon optical ballot scanners are freestanding, not internet connected.
That's
my
correct.
Understanding
That's
as
correct.
Well.
As
so
far
they're
as I
not
know.
Hackable. Their data, vote tally numbers get submitted on different links. Those numbers do get collected in Salem via internet, I presume, on the night of the election.
Right, but it's pretty hard to mess with that.
Yeah, but recall the election of 2000, a rather consequential election. Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, the one that was kicked all the way to the Supreme Court.
Yeah.
You remember how long it took to do all the counting of the ballots?
Oh, yeah.
And what a laborious process it was?
Oh, yeah, that was the Chads.
Chads. Pregnant Chads, hanging Chads,
so on and so forth.
Yeah. In Canada, every vote is counted on the night of the election, within a few hours of the polls closing.
Remarkable.
Yes.
I believe that's true in most of the European countries.
Right, because to do otherwise is just dumb. It's dumb and it's anti-democratic. That we can't do it here is evidence of, either incompetence or deep corruption or both.
Well, we could do it here. We don't want to do it here.
We don't want to do it here.
In fact, we like a mechanized, we're ritualistically in love with technology, which is a thing you and I argue about some, since I'm a Luddite.
Ritualistically.
Ritualistically.
Yes, indeed.
It's like religion.
Would you like to come take part in my iPad ceremony this evening? It's beautiful.
I know, and it glows. As long as you keep battery in there. We got some other calls.
Yes, we do. Edie, good morning.
Good morning. What I'd like us to do is to unite on multiple fronts. When it comes to voting and the fraudulent, widespread systemic voter suppression, paper ballots, but also have folks being able to, keep their own copy, like carbon copy for themselves.
Well, that's an interesting idea, actually.
We have 7 years to hold the ballots. That we need to have the hardware that counts it be owned by us. Right now it's corporate owned, and we're not allowed to know, not allowed to fix it or anything like that. We need to have open software for the count, that everyone online can look at, see what it is, if there's any bugs. And that is for the scanners that are self-standing counting it as a backup. A verification of, you might say, of the primary being hand counting. Right now, when we count the ballots, we allow blue and black pens to be in the same room where black and blue pens mark the ballots. We need to forbid that. And we need to be able to have, when you're not sure what something is, you're writing a note about it, have that on a scanner on not detected, a pink or like pink pen, felt pen, and we need to get the corporate folks out who can hang from us now. We have volunteers and we have observers. Except that the people that own the corporate hardware and software, who often have promised certain results long before the voting even occurs, are allowed out of our view and off of camera to bring in their pens and to write and to do things. We need to also have the counting where it verifies the correctness of the ballot count not be as it is now, where you run a few in as a test, and then the bulk of it is not tested. At the end, it's tested. We need to have it at random times tested so that it cannot be scammed or having fake counts at certain times. We need to have the people who are doing the hand visual counts be more than a lot of us same old white women that have been volunteering are getting too old to do it. We need to have larger open space camera that is seen, and we need to be able to have a change in our Oregon Constitution, for example, that we don't have the college, electoral college, but that we have not. Winner takes all, but proportional voting, and then we need to have star voting so that when we do vote, it is you choose your first choice, your second choice, your third choice, etc., and those who will get the most across party lines are voted, and that the ballot measures that are going forward are corrected on the constitutional rights before they are going out there for the ballot. Petitions to get enough to be on the ballot. We also need to be able to have controlling of the gerrymandering. It's not just about the census, but also just on the human count. The government already pretty much knows where folks are just with satellite night visioning, where human bodies, etc. But we need to have that be available with voting, that no one loses their voting rights because of felony charges, no one, and that we make it much easier and quicker for folks
Well,
spending a whole lot less money to become a citizen in the first place.
Well, yeah, you've named a lot of stuff, and part of what I have a problem with is the structural system we have. States count the ballots. It is state government that makes the rules to vote in each state. One thing that can be done in terms of the process of the Electoral College is to have each state decide, and this is not a constitutional question, this is a state's question, to decide that the vote in that state goes to the candidate which gets the largest number of votes. And that's one thing that can be done. But what the many things you want to see done are, in many cases, much more difficult than you would think. Again, the system, whatever you or I might think about it, is created by the founding fathers. Remember, no mothers. The founding fathers to essentially empower the states because there was great fear of a central government. And that's still the system. And it really does take a tremendous amount of effort to change the Constitution, and it's very dangerous. It would be a constitutional convention, and I can tell you the right would be right there. Anyway, that's my take on all that. Aside from, you have many good suggestions aside from that, but I'm pretty happy with the system in Oregon right now. I think the voter system we have right now, which is basically, you know, if you drive, you can vote, essentially. And I think that it's very important that the system be as open as possible to the American people in every state. But there's no constitutional process that would be possible without a constitutional amendment to improve it.
Hey, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Our engineer Ray asked me a question over the internet machine here. What if people simply don't answer the citizenship question? Does that void their whole response to the census?
I don't know.
And I did a little research. The answer is no. You can skip the citizenship question, and you will still be counted, and all of your other responses will still be tabulated.
They won't come and take your children or something?
Well, that remains to be seen. Yeah. But you don't have to answer that question if you don't want to. You can still respond to everything else, and you still will be numbered among the people living in the United States.
That's a good answer.
That is a good answer, yes. Who's next? Blake, good morning.
Good morning. How's it going?
Not bad. How are you?
Good. I'm calling to offer a bit of a different perspective and kind of challenge your progressive dogma and conspiracy theories, but sounds like it might have already had a hole poked in it with just the fact that you can skip the question. But in terms of states with high immigration, there's many red states, Florida and Texas, top five immigration states. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the growth rate of states with the highest growth rates, they're almost all red. Mm-hmm. Wyoming, Dakotas, Mississippi. So I'm not so sure that question, the main thrust of it, is to suppress the population count in blue states. But I think, moreover, I have a few other points. You know, many of your allegations are not backed by evidence.
But so what do you think the main thrust of including the citizenship question is?
I'm not really calling to offer a perspective on that. I think my basic take is, asking if you're a U.S. citizen, you know, is a reasonable question on a census and something that seems valuable to know for a lot of different reasons that isn't necessarily coming down to rounding people up or anything like that. I mean, it's not like some weird out of the blue question. I mean, it's a survey from the government, you know, asking, you know, basic things. But kind of on to some of my other points, I think with going back to paper, I mean, I think that's just a dream. I mean, I think we need to be embracing online voting and technology like blockchain technology. That's going to be the barrier to entry for voting. You know, if you can just vote online with a secure system where there's an audit trail of all the metadata and you could follow it, you know, that's going to be the future of voting. You know, we're not going back to paper.
And how do you ensure that a system like that is incorruptible?
I think, you know, there's some really exciting emerging technologies. I would like I said, I'd point to blockchain as one where there's both the element of privacy but also the integrity of the system where there's some kind of transparency into like a public ledger where you can see literally kind of everyone has access to the data.
So, well, you know, all the things you're describing, all the things you're thinking about having would be expensive, number one. Number two, what the hell's wrong with paper ballots? Why not have paper ballots? It's so simple. It's so fundamental. It's so absolutely approachable. I mean, many, many people, not just me, are uncomfortable with having to go through a computer to do anything. And what you're suggesting, essentially, is absolute dependence on machines.
I think there's a fair point, you know, of arguing, you know, if you know, a kind of a technology purist, or you putting too much trust into that, and I'm not denying that, but I think you know, high level, that I think it's a bit of a misnomer to kind of just assume that because it's on a computer, it's more corruptible than paper. There can actually be technology that, like I said, lowers the barrier to entry. If everyone can vote without having to go into a place, you know, just how you do, you know, you file your taxes online. There's so much other critical stuff you do online that I think, one, that would be kind of the one proponent. And I think the automatic assumption that it's going to be more corruptible, you know, is tangible as well.
Well, but you do understand that right now we are seeing corruption of computer systems on an enormous scale by whole nation states. It's not just a fantasy or a paranoia. It's real. And when we do things by the old-fashioned methods, that corruption disappears.
I guess, you know, I would want to be, like, presented with the evidence of some kind of study, you know, that does show that. And I would be open to that conclusion. I'm definitely open to changing my mind with, you know, when presented with a with
fair
a
enough. Case. Fair enough.
But the automatic reaction that, that this technology is kind of like the, you know, let's fear it, you know, I think, you know, seems silly to me. And as I look forward, it just seems a bit ridiculous to think we're going to go back to paper. You know, maybe that's kind of a knee-jerk reaction by me, you know, kind of being, you know, call it younger and embracing all these, you know, new technologies. But I want to make one other point that I kind of recently, over the last couple of years, I've kind of withdrawn my support for KBOO, and I still listen and whatnot. But, you know, one of the things that has kind of been off-putting about maybe my leaving of the progressive left is like this undertone of hate for America. And, you know, you use terms like original sin and you know, constantly bringing up the, you know, the founding fathers are only white males. And I've read Howard Zinn, and I, you know, I get that perspective, but it's like you're only offering that perspective of America. And I think you leave yourself open to so much challenge, and once presented with other points, you know, the one story of America being this, you know, cruel place that is, you know, displacing, you know, underprivileged people, you know, I think is somewhat of a simple narrative that has just become a bit nauseating for me.
Well, I can see that it's disturbing. It's disturbing idea set, and I can see that people might be in intellectual or ideological denial about it. But the facts that are outlined by Zinn and others really are facts. They're not mythos. They're not ideologically based solely, but they are, of course, ideologically based. But they're real. I mean, the documents are real. The history is real. I taught American history for a long, long time in the university and the community colleges. What I taught is, as far as I know, and as far as anyone I know in the field, is valid. And it's not about liberal or conservative. It's about what happened. So the argument you're making is basically based on the idea that the left has become excessively paranoid around issues of the creation myth of America. I don't think that's a true fact. I think the myth is not a myth alone. It's a reality. And I think that there is an incomplete democratic, small d, process that needs to be completed. And I think that the whole process that we've got now is in danger of corruption, in part because of technologies that can interface with the actual actions of voters, as well as the process that gives enormous power to money. And there's no question about that.
No, I think those are some fair points.
Okay.
You know, but again, you know, I think, you know, much of my, I think, more recent criticism of the left stems from this undertone that America is built on, I guess, like evil intentions, and not that there was not.
Well, I wouldn't call them evil intentions. I would call it self-interest of the powerful.
I mean, do you want to preserve the, you know, Western civilization and America and free markets and or do you want to turn America
into... We don't have free markets, first of all. That's a myth. That is a real myth.
I've heard the critique of that. Like, government intervention always plays. I mean, markets don't have...
Well, it's not just government intervention. It's the pattern of monopoly that we see in our society. You know, I mean, have you ever been able...
Monopolies are usually caused by state intervention, by regulations that lower the, you know, that essentially allow one company to dominate, like AT&T back in the day. But, you know, monopolies like Amazon or something, where it's like they're just offering the best consumer products, that's a little bit different, you know. But most monopolies are not caused by market conditions or call it capitalism. They're caused by government intervention.
Well, I think I don't have time, and you don't either, I don't think, to have this conversation. But let me just say that the pattern of capitalism in America, as we see it, is toward aggregating, what's the right term, aggregating all of the money at the top. And it's been a long and steady process, and there's no question but that has happened. Now, the question is it the fault of the government? Is it the fault of the wealthy? These are actually less relevant than the fact that it has happened. And how we deal with that is very, very important. I argue, for example, that it doesn't matter so much that a creepazoid fascist is now president. What does matter is that creepazoid fascist has the enormous support of vast money power. And that makes a very big difference. So, you know, we can disagree about, you know, causation, but I don't think we should disagree about the facts of the situation.
And let me just, go ahead, please, go ahead.
I mean, I was just going to say that, I guess I fundamentally do think there's definitely an issue with you know, kind of almost the new economy demanding that certain IQs are really only get rewarded, and that's so much different than ever. And I do think inequality, you know, is a concern, but the notion that it's a zero-sum game, that rich people or you know, the consolidation of wealth at the top is necessarily taking away money from the bottom rungs, I don't think it's quite works like that, you know.
But it does. We just saw a tax thing doing exactly that.
You have the highest, you know, the least amount of poverty. Often, you know, countries with the lowest amount of inequality, you know, everyone's poor, you know. So,
well, that's an interesting problem, but it's not relevant to this conversation, really.
Sure. Well, I guess I'll make one more point. You know, I've always enjoyed your show, Joe and Abe, and you know, like I said, I've had a kind of a move towards called the center, you know, over the last couple of years, and it's been a little bit harder to support KBOO. But I do enjoy your discussions, and I guess I'd just like to offer a bit of a challenge to...
No, that's fine.
What I see a bit of a progressive dogma.
Well, and, no, I appreciate that, and it makes the show more interesting from my point of view. But I have a challenge for you. Tomorrow's my birthday. I'm not going to tell you how old I am, but in my name, I love this, give KBOO as much money as you can afford. In fact, everybody out there, in my name, this is a big ego trip, give KBOO money now before the pledge drive, and then give it during the pledge drive. Because if you like this, we can only do more of it if we get a lot of money.
Fair enough.
Okay. Well, let me just say one thing to you before we let you go. Well, two things, actually. The first is I've really appreciated your call. It's a very thoughtful and well-articulated statement that you've made to us this morning, and I appreciate that. I want to address, though, what you said was the driving force of your gradual separation from the progressive left, and that is, I believe you characterize it as this pervasive sense of hatred or dislike towards the United States. Speaking just for myself, for me, it's not a feeling of hatred or dislike. It's a feeling of disappointment. I think Dr. King said it very well when he said that all he wanted to do and all his supporters, all that they wanted to do was see the United States live up to what they put down on paper. It is one thing for the United States to claim the mantle of democracy and the moral high ground throughout the world. That's fine, but it's belied by the facts of our own history, and it's belied by what continues to go on today. So when you hear me as a progressive criticize the United States, it's not because I dislike it. It's not because I hate it. It's because I'm disappointed, and because I want to see the United States live up to the narrative that it's established on paper in 1789, and that narrative that has wound its way through American life ever since. And that is that despite All of these things arrayed against it. The franchise has grown larger with every generation. True equality has grown closer with every generation. And despite all these obstacles, we continue to move toward a more equitable, more just, truly multicultural society. And that, in my mind, borders on the miraculous. So yes, it is a good idea and rightful and meaningful and just to criticize all the misdeeds that have been done in the United States of America. But where I think the left and where I think the progressives sometimes stumble is that we need to admit our deep love for this country. Because here's the basic fact. If we didn't, as progressives, love this country, we wouldn't give a damn. We wouldn't bother to complain. We wouldn't bother to push for change. Because at the same time that all of these horrible things have happened, this is also the country that has given us Dr. King, that has given us Hendrix and Davis and Star Trek, for God's sake. It has given us all these beautiful things. We have seen
Star
one of the
Trek
great...
Star Trek is a beautiful thing, Joe. No, it's
a
not.
A beautiful thing.
It's not a beautiful
we
thing.
Have witnessed
it's a silly
it,
thing.
We have witnessed
and,
in
and
this...
And most of those things are, have been built on, you know, individualism, you know, and entrepreneurship.
Oh, sure,
you know, and,
sure.
And,
sure.
You know, and I want to make sure those values are also appreciated.
I think they are worth affirming, and we appreciate your call. And you know,
yeah.
Where we may disappear. I have a friend. In fact, I have.
No, I was not. I wasn't finished.
Okay, sorry.
Please,
sorry. Go ahead.
What I'm saying is,
praise it.
Speaking for myself as a
progressive, praise it loudly.
I see the beauty that this country has brought forth, and I see the beauty that it can still bring forth when it finally reaches its culmination. And until we reach that point, I am not going to stop pushing for it.
It's getting hot.
Yeah. All right, go ahead.
I think that it's important to understand that there are certain virtues and values that are characteristic of the United States, at least so stated, if not in actuality. And I also think the potential still exists for this to be a true democracy. However, I think there is no question about the pattern that is going on and has been going on for quite a while. I think that what used to be the Republican Party, which used to be a conservative party arguing for less government, is in fact a party of now a party of a certain kind of peculiar and modern fascism. I don't think that's deniable. I think it's really obvious. I think that it's a very sad situation. I don't have great faith in the Democrats either because they seem like kind of wishy-washy silly willies with a few good progressives involved. I'm not very happy with the situation, but you know, it's yeah. there's a potential for better.
And I think I'm just more hopeful person than you.
Well, you are. You've always been a more hopeful person.
It's because I watch Star Trek, Joe.
It's because you're a Catholic.
No, I'm not a Catholic.
You are too.
All right, who's next?
You are too.
Joe, you're next. Good morning.
Gee, after all the manipulative maunderings of that interloper you just had on there, I'm going to be out of time. The subject is. Is censorship census with citizenship?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
they don't even define citizen accurately because the definition changes from state to state.
Oh, really?
I thought it was
defined in the Constitution.
Well, think about it. Are you a full citizen? Have you ever been convicted of having marijuana? In some states, you can't vote. You can't own firearms. You can't do this, that, or the other.
No, you're raising an interesting point. There are huge numbers of people who have, for one reason or another, been convicted of a crime, often a nonviolent crime, but often a violent crime, who are in some states not allowed to vote ever again. And that is wrong, and that should be changed.
And it's one of the tactics of disenfranchisement.
Right. It's used a lot for persons of color, by the way.
I agree, but my point is, because somebody already brought the subject up, I wanted to change it just a little bit. The Electoral College is illegitimate as it stands. No state in this country has their own legislatures delineated by subsidiary jurisdictions. In other words, they don't allocate senators by the counties or the parishes. They allocate senators by the population count. They allocate their representatives.
No, senators. Two, every state gets two. Population doesn't factor
in. No, but in their state legislature, they do not allocate anybody by the sub-jurisdiction level. No county, no city has their own representative. It's always based on population division, equal population division. They could do that in the United States federal government by eliminating state influence on the senators.
Well, but the Constitution establishes that the whole process is to be done by the states.
Right, and that's why that part of it is corrupt. And well, corruptible and manipulative.
And, of course, we're really discussing gerrymandering here. You know what? We're running out of time.
I know.
I appreciate your comment about running out of time, but it's real. And so I want to thank you for the call. You've raised some interesting points. Are we good? Are we going to have another caller? Is it possible?
No, I think we're good.
I think we're good.
Yeah, we're just about out of time.
I don't hear the music.
Yeah, interesting discussion today. And as always, I'm really impressed by our callers. They're impress a bunch of people.
Yeah, but you deny your Catholicism.
I'm not a Catholic.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
It's not a hereditary thing.
I thought it was.
No.
Oh.
All right. Thanks everybody for your input today. This has been the Abe and Joe Talk Radio program. You are listening to 90.7 KBOO on your radio dial, and we'll be back at you next week. Thanks for tuning in.
From those nads in Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the feel that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
This is KBOO Portland. The time now is 9 o'clock, and coming up next is Alternative Radio.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It was fun.
Yep, it was a good one.
KBOO Community Radio is 50. We are celebrating our birthday with a big street fair and party on August 11th from noon to 10 p.m. here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue in Portland, Oregon.
We'll be broadcasting live bands all day and have an open house celebrating 50 years of KBOO.
There will be a reunion from 2 to 5 during the street party for folks looking to see KBOO volunteers from other eras.
So save the date, Saturday, August 11th, to celebrate the 50 years of KBOO with your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Facing America's Nuclear Legacy, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the Pacific Islands, on Monday, August 6th at 6 p.m. at the Japanese American Historical Plaza in Portland. Facing America's Nuclear Legacy will remember the victims of the August 6th and August 9th, 1945